and welcome to Fix It, the podcast by The Fix Media, where we unpack media insights and take you behind the scenes of editorial decisions, strategy, and innovation in the industry. I am Eliza, and I will be your host today. Before we dig in, follow, subscribe, and show us some love at thefix.media. Welcome to the very first episode of Fix It. Today, we're kicking things off by diving into the core of who we are and where we are headed. There's a lot happening, emerging trends, evolving formats, and yes, of course, some exciting changes on the horizon too. To help us unpack it all, I'm joined here by a very special guest, Jakub Paruzinski, the founder of The Fix and the mastermind behind our mission. We'll be talking about one of the most urgent topics in journalism today, the rise of AI, its impact, risks, and how we at The Fix are thinking about it. So let's get started. Hello, Jakub. How are you?
Great. Thanks for inviting me here.
Well, thank you for coming. It's a pleasure to have you here. So let's start with a few words about who we are. The Fix Research and Advisory, The Fix Magazine. We are working across so many fronts these days.
Yes, so The Fix was launched a couple of years ago, basically with this idea that the media industry doesn't really do quite enough research about itself, especially when it comes to media that are from parts of the world outside of North America and Western Europe. And that was initially our goal with The Fix, to look at innovation, how media are changing in different parts of the world, where I would say we're heavily anchored in Central and Eastern Europe. A lot of the team is from, you know, Ukraine, Poland, etc. So we naturally looked at what's happening in the media space on the eastern side of Europe, but also looking at what is happening with colleagues from different parts of the world. And it's been a really fascinating adventure so far. Certainly a very, very turbulent couple of years. But I think overall, when I look at the media sector over the last sort of five to six years, when we really started working on projects related to The Fix, certainly media are themselves in a stronger place than they were, I would say, although the challenges are becoming more difficult.
Well, I think we all understand the challenges today. But is there anything that you're working on that you're very excited about and you would like to mention?
I mean, there's a couple of projects that are really exciting. I think the one that is, or sort of the two that I would mention that I find the most inspiring, is they're both on the research side of things. One is that we have been working on a dashboard that looks at sort of gathering lots of data about media on a country level. We've already covered a couple of countries, and we're expanding. And what we found is that sort of the quantity and the quality of data that you can get, and especially when you sort of build a aggregate and a comprehensive picture, is really helpful. And it's been very helpful for investors, for donors, for media themselves to make decisions. So I think that's something that's been personally I found very rewarding. The other one is we've been developing a few edtech solutions in the media education space, which have been, I think, very exciting. And people are very interested in finding new ways to learn about the media, because education in the media space is an issue. The sector has changed so a lot, and the curricula at different institutions haven't really changed that much over the last 5, 10, sometimes even 20 years. So finding new ways, more efficient, more effective ways to teach people is obviously quite exciting. And then personally, I spend a lot of time at KI Insights, which is basically a research center, a strategic intelligence center backed by the Kyiv Independent, where we have to hit straight away at the topic of today's discussion. We've been experimenting a little bit with AI, and I have to say, the more I experiment, the more I'm skeptical about just how useful it is for quality journalism.
So what I understand from this is that there is innovation all around. And yes, it is a great transition to AI that we will be talking about today. Maybe let's focus on those changes. One of the biggest transformations shaping the media landscape right now is AI, as we all know. So we're past the initial panic where everyone feared AI would take our jobs. So where do you think that we are standing now? And what is the concern that you would like to bring up?
So let me go maybe first of all basing. So The Fix works with a lot of different media, and personally, I'm also a lecturer at the Stockholm and the program director at the Stockholm School of Economics in Riga, which does a lot of media programs, and the media there themselves are experimenting with AI, and as well as, you know, I get to see it in terms of its applications at the Kyiv Independent, specifically at KI Insights. So let me sort of go outside in. Overall, in terms of the sector, it's been the big topic for the better part of the last 2 years already. First in the sort of AI is coming, and then once people had a chance to actually, by the way, for most people in the media space, I would say AI still means playing around with ChatGPT or the dozen other sort of language models that are out there, as well as sort of visualization tools like Midjourney and things like that. And I would say that for most of the media, there has been an embrace of solutions. And a lot of people are using that. I see it in the outputs, especially from the younger journalists, that they're increasingly using AI to produce content. And overall, on the management issue, on the management level, what we see is a lot of senior leaders in different media organizations thinking about how they can actually make use of AI at sort of anything approaching a meaningful scale. So far, this hasn't really delivered very impressive results. I think the areas where in this sort of, in my view, and, you know, admittedly, maybe I'm missing some of the aspects here. What we've seen is, I think on the visualization side, the ability to sort of create both images and now videos that are developed by AI has been very impressive. And to the extent that you can actually implement them in journalism, then that's working fairly well. I think on the content side, frankly, it's a bit of a mixed picture. And what I find really useful as a framework to think about media itself and then how you can use AI in that is to think of media, essentially, it's sort of like the restaurant industry, right? In the sense of there's a very wide range of fairly small products. It's a very distributed and broken up industry. And the type of product that people, that a given person likes to consume is going to vary very widely depending on who that person is. So there's people who really enjoy a fast food, sort of a tabloidy kind of, let's just get some entertainment value out of this kind of media. There's people who are looking for something that is very informative, maybe not too exciting, you know, something a little bit more healthy. There's people who consume media because it's part of their job, and what they need is accurate and timely information. And so it's almost kind of like the restaurant industry, right? Most people end up having a bit of a mix of diets, you know, McDonald's once a week or once a month, but the rest of the time something else, or the other way around. And when it comes to the use of AI in terms of actual content generation, which is where most of the media currently focus, frankly, the things that are being produced are just not up to par, right? And the problem is, you know, you have a piece of AI content and you look at it and you see, oh, it's extremely well written. There's no spelling mistakes. There's no grammar mistakes, usually. So in that, AI already is unfortunately better than the majority of journalists. Sorry, I'm just going to be blunt about that. The level of writing is generally not that great, and I think it has been getting worse over the last couple of years. And so at first glance, it looks really good. But then you start to analyze, actually go paragraph by paragraph, fact by fact, and you find that it's not so much what that things are wrong, although there's tons of problems with, you know, what we call hallucinations and false information, just dreamt up fake facts inside the, or fake information inside what AI is producing. It's just the content is being gathered on a very superficial level. And I think there's a sort of recursive problem as well, in that AI is pulling together content which is public, and most of the content that is public is already quite poor. Right now, it might write it really well, but the actual level of how useful that content is and how, you know, informative it is, I think is quite low. So when it comes to things, now I'm going to get very specific. So when it comes to something you know, the goal is to have entertaining news, tabloidy, a little bit, you know, sort of sketchy kind of information. Think, you know, sort of tabloidy news about some affairs. Or recently I had a student sort of dream up this idea of creating a new a regional news channel that would find cringy and weird information from regional outlets in her country. Well, that AI can do fairly well. Find something weird, write a story about it. You're not so worried about something being wrong or incorrect, and it just sort of churns it out. But the thing is, most of the web is now starting to be very trashy, and huge parts of it are already garbage. And for anyone who is actually consuming news that is meant to be informative and useful, AI is just not good enough. And the quality, all that we're doing is we're putting out more garbage into the world. So I have a very specific example of that with KI Insights. So KI Insights is essentially a research product. We write mostly about what's happening in Ukraine in connection to the war, Ukrainian politics, Ukrainian business. A overwhelming majority of the information that we gather is non-public. It's for a very small group of decision makers from embassies, international organizations, businesses, people who work on Ukraine and who need very sort of informative, forward-looking, very sort of, it's a, you know, in the sort of, in the world of restaurants, I would say it's a very high-end kind of, I'd like to think Michelin starry, but you know, it's certainly a very prestigious project. The subscription is very expensive. It's $200 a month. So this is not your sort of run-of-the-mill type of product, but it needs to be very high quality. We've experimented a lot with trying to pull together things with AI, and we have not yet found a single case in which the content would be of acceptable level.
No, I totally see what you're talking about. I just wanted to ask you for a more specific example. So yes, AI cannot produce, of course, the best result. Do you think that this is leading us towards personalizing more the content that we are producing? Do you think that the journalists themselves are playing a big role when it comes to the content that will be consumed?
I mean, it's a good question, but I think what's happened over the last couple of years, and AI has really accentuated a trend that was already happening, is that the role of media and the role of journalists itself has changed, right? And so if you think about, you know, the BBC has this sort of need, I think it's the BBC, has this kind of needs framework of, you know, what kind of human needs should a piece of content essentially fulfill? And there's entertain me, inform me, etc. There's six of them. I can't remember, unfortunately, all six of them right now. But if you think about the ones that are very entertainment focused, that's almost not something that the media do anymore, right? Because it's a piece of activity that has been extracted from the journalistic sphere into other spheres, right? If it's news as comedy, well, then there's The Daily Show, there's John Oliver. Every, you know, country has its own sort of version of that, or multiple people who are doing that. And that's not something that sits with the news companies anymore, right? So that's just sort of gone, right? If we think about something that is more tawdry, kind of trashy, entertaining, Jerry Springer sort of people, well, you know, reality TV has taken that. The tabloids are competing very hard against it, but there's a real problem about staying competitive there. And I would say at this point, if you look even more broadly, anything that is related to somebody trying to get your attention on a given topic, then social media native content, frequently by creators, has already taken away all of that business. Now, they can use AI. Whether or not they use AI, that's a different question. Often they do. But that's already something that news media and journalists have lost, right? So then there's a question, well, what's left? One of those is, you know, media were traditionally built to somebody important said something or did something, made a decision. You spread that decision out there, right? That's something that isn't really part of the news, the essential news any needs anymore, right? It's still part of the activity, but media aren't really needed for that. And politicians across the world have very clearly embraced this sort of direct to the public way of communicating. Look at what's happening in the US. The US president has his own social media, platform, right? Through which he communicates with the broader world. Now, do you need 5,000 different media all over the globe taking a Donald Trump truth, right? Because that's what the tweets are called on Truth Social, taking a Donald Trump truth and then adding the dateline saying Trump posted this and then adding maybe, you know, a few paragraphs of content. I don't know, right? Can that be replaced by AI? Definitely. But is it, you know, is there any point in doing that? Well, not really, because what is the real value other than sort of the tabloidy, pardon the French, you can cut this if it's needed to, but you know, the shit show that has happened between Musk and Trump over the last couple of days, you know, is that really newsworthy from an entertainment perspective? Sure. In terms of the impact on the stock market, sure. But you know, is that something that journalists need to spend a lot of time sort of covering and analyzing? Probably not, right? Can you give that away to AI? Sure, you can. But the thing is, I don't think that's even, sorry, let me rephrase this. I think that's a game that the news companies have already lost to social media. Because if somebody is following the fight between Musk and Trump, they've already followed it on social media, and the reason that they click on CNN is just to relive how entertaining and how sort of, you know, catty it was. That they might go to Bloomberg to see what has been the implications for different parts of the stock market, but the news value of a media telling you that Trump said this and Musk said that, that's all gone. By the way, the fight that we saw over the last 2 days, two of the sort of most powerful, richest people on the planet, both fighting via their social media platforms. Because Musk owns one and Trump owns another. So where is the role for media in this? I don't know, right? So then that leaves you with the question of, well, what do journalists actually deliver that is of value? And I would say the problem with using AI to do what journalists have been doing over the last couple of years is that you're replicating an activity that de facto delivers quite little value to most readers.
Like in the episode, sounds like we're a great match and we couldn't be happier. If you'd like to strengthen our bond, support us by donating or joining our membership program. That's it. No more interruptions. Back to the episode.
So this actually gives us an answer about the big media, right? Like it is kind of a kick under the belt for the big media. But then what happens with independent media and smaller media organizations?
I mean, in terms of AI, I think it's all really tied to the availability of local data. So there's been a startup for a while now out of Sweden, if I'm not mistaken, United Robots, which actually has a model that integrates AI very nicely for mid-sized newsrooms, newsrooms with maybe less than 10 people on the editorial side, that allows you to create a lot of different verticals, types of content with the use of AI. And again, it really depends on what you're doing. If you want to summarize the changes in the prices of the housing market locally, sure, that's actually probably something that can be figured out fairly well, right? If you're talking about, you know, summarizing the results of the local sports team playing versus the one from the neighboring city, again, that's something that AI can do. How popular is that piece of content? I don't know. I would seriously challenge how big the audience is for that, because what I see is there's a lot of demand for sports, but usually there's demand for, I would say, quite smart, funny, interesting, or at least charismatic commentary on the sports rather than just summarizing what has happened. And, you know, can AI replace that? I'm sure to an extent, right? That's probably something that can happen. But that's not actually those are all additional functions that media has taken on because they were sort of profitable. But when it comes to the core sort of value propositions that journalists provide is being able to understand what are the local development plans, you know, how are decisions made by the local politicians, how you can get an investment that will create a company or something like that. It's really sort of the economic and the political lifeblood, as well as the social, and what kind of activities are there. That part, I think it's there's definitely a role for AI to be part of that, but I don't think that it can effectively replace it. And what we've seen on a local level that works relatively well is, for example, the stuff that Tiny Capital has funded in Canada, which really starts around, there's a newsletter run by somebody who's very passionate about their local community. I think they've mostly been working in smaller sort of mid-sized cities across Canada and a little bit of the northwest of the US, and then scaling them to the level that they can be scaled economically, right? And essentially what journalists can do within a sort of this, this local framework is build a community of people who care about the city, communicate with them, be part of that community, and sort of redefine the role that, yes, I mean, maybe you're leveraging some tools that are, you know, whether it's AI or social media or whatever as part of the community, but what you are in essence is a community manager and a moderator, right? Who's who's sort of finding information, trying to make that information useful to people.
Moving a little bit to what is coming up, we often talk about AI hallucinating or replicating biases from training data. So do you think that media outlets are equipped to detect and correct these biases before publishing AI-assisted content, for example?
Definitely not. I have very serious doubts about this. And, you know, building any system is very difficult, and then breaking that system is very easy. And, you know, just from the experience of working on Ukrainian issues, there's already reported cases of Russia sort of systematically trying to introduce biases into AI output by, you know, flooding the zone with content or some other strategies. And when you think about how easy it is to break things and how big the resources are when it comes to manipulating information versus reporting information, there's no way that I can see media winning that fight, unfortunately. Just to give you two examples. So in Russia, most of the censorship is run via Roskomnadzor. The security and intelligence services certainly play their role, but sort of Roskomnadzor is the main censorship organ. When you look at the budget that they put versus the sort of quote-unquote independent media, the grant-funded media or the opposition-funded media, we're talking about 40-1 imbalance, right? As in 40 million on one side, 1 million on the other side. It's the actual numbers are closer to sort of estimated 700-800 million. And then on the other side, it's sort of 20, something like that. I don't remember exactly, but the imbalance is absolutely. When you look at even sort of more mundane figures, like how many PR people are there to one journalist? A couple of years ago, that stood at 7-1. 7 PR people for every one journalist. That imbalance has only increased since constant job cuts are happening on the journalism side and the PR side keeps growing. Now, add to that the marketing budgets and the fact that on the marketing side, on the side that wants to shape the narrative, they're very, very interested in finding ways that they can, you know, shape the output that AI produces. And on the other side, you have very often not very tech savvy, underfunded, under capacity news organizations versus, you know, extremely well oiled and well resourced machines. It would be unreasonable to assume that any sort of meaningful victory can be achieved by media.
Do you think that this also creates some need for different skills in journalists, like prompt engineering or tool mastery over traditional reporting experience? I mean, what would that mean for the next generation of journalists, do you think?
So two things. I think one, just it really does depend on what kind of content you're putting out there. And if the goal is to produce content that is more entertaining or is focused on a specific variable, sort of vertical that has a lot of public data, then maybe you're fine, right? Media is incredibly diverse as an ecosystem or as a market. Every sort of reporting vertical, every country, every outlet is a little bit different. So it's very hard to sort of generalize. But there's a whole host of areas where prompt engineering and sort of just managing the AI system, which gobbles up content and spits out content, is going to be useful. So I think there's a part of the world where that works. I think there's a very large part of the world where that doesn't work. And frankly, what I am more worried about today is not the lack of prompt engineering skills when it comes to the new generation of reporters, but the lack of reporting skills. So, you know, through the combination of this kind of Gen Z sort of slash millennial, just not wanting to communicate to people, which has gotten worse with COVID. You know, the fact that people don't pick up a phone, don't go and talk to people who work in a given industry to understand what those people are actually thinking about. This is a really, really big issue. And I think that's actually going to get a lot worse because of social media and the fact that so much of what we do is public. Companies and political organizations have adjusted, and they are now much more careful about what they release into the public space, right? A few years ago, maybe a decade ago, you could go online and track a lot of things through open source, through social media, stalking people on their Facebook pages and just finding out a lot of content. Nowadays, everyone is much more guarded and much more careful. So what is actually out there in the public space on the internet is far less reflective of what is actually happening, the actual decision-making process and you know, what is being discussed behind closed doors. And so being able to go and report and talk to people is actually more valuable than it was previously. I think when it comes to the sort of new generation that is coming into the media space, it's very hard because there's an expectation. So first of all, this is an industry that's going through a lot of crises. It is in decline in most parts of the world, in most areas. And the level of competition, you know, that is being produced by AI is really rough. And so I think if somebody really wants to make a career in the media space, they need to put in a huge amount of work to actually pick up the skills from the basics, do as much reporting as you can. And the problem is that AI is taking away the types of activities on which people gained experience, even if it wasn't very interesting, or even if it was boring or mundane. So it's removing the training programs, essentially, that existed in organizations. And I think being incredibly dogged about trying to recreate those training programs for yourself is probably one of the best things that you can do early on in your career, and make sure that you're doing better than AI. Because again, to come back to where we started on this, the problem with AI is that, you know, if you're a senior editor and you ask a junior journalist to produce a copy, and that copy is slightly worse than what ChatGPT is doing, that's terrible for you. But it's also terrible because it sets the, like, what ChatGPT is doing is not acceptable journalism. Like, just to be clear, I have yet to see something that I would consider useful journalism done by ChatGPT, like really useful journalism. It still can't pick up a call and talk to somebody and get that person to share non-public information. It's as simple as that. The day AI is able to do that, then we're talking about a completely different ballgame. But as long as it's stuck, you know, gobbling up trashy content that is available publicly and just writing it up in a more clear and clean way, that's not enough. That's not enough to be useful.
Okay, as we are approaching the end of this podcast, before we wrap up, there is one more question I would like to ask you. It is a fact then that we cannot escape AI and what is coming in the future, right? But yet a lot of people still love it and experience a lot with it. What is your advice on how to make the most out of it for journalism?
So I honestly, I think one is look beyond the content creation. I think we get very caught up in that. And even despite the fact that content creation is the main part of the job in journalism, that's maybe not the place where AI is the most useful. Now, you know, having a sort of a chatbot that works with subscribers is probably something that's actually quite helpful. You know, the stuff that Klarna is doing, the fintech, but I think at this point, almost all of their customer service is done by AI. that's actually something that probably is really, really useful, because most of the questions can be, you know, what you just want is somebody who responds in a caring and sort of polite way and consistent way and provides you, leads you to essentially what is a page with frequently asked questions, but maybe you can tailor them and adapt them to look like more personalized answers. So I think that's a really great place. Looking through subscribers and identifying those who might churn sooner. That's a very useful application to AI. Anything that is that looks at sort of the customer service more broadly, whether it's sort of creating marketing materials or things like that, I think that's a great place where you can use AI. I don't think you can use it in the actual content creation, but as something to talk to, absolutely. And by the way, maybe this is the sort of the most useful use for now. I think ChatGPT as a therapist is pretty good from what I'm hearing. A lot of people have told me that it's a very useful tool to talk to share some concerns. It gives you some advice. You know, obviously be careful about just how much you sort of take that advice into consideration, but it doesn't get bored of listening to you, and that's probably already better than most of the friends and therapists out there. So there's definitely value in that. So you know, media and journalism, it's a hard life. At least you have ChatGPT to talk to.
And I'm sure that we have yet to see where this will reach, right? Jakub, thank you so much for being our very first guest and kicking off this journey with us. To everyone listening, thanks for joining. That's all for now. Follow The Fix, subscribe to Fix It, and if you want to help us grow, head over to thefix.media and join our membership family.